Welcome back. I'm going to read from an editorial that ran in the Sun-Times this week. The Cook County Public Defender has one of the most important jobs in the criminal justice system. The incumbent, Amy Campanelli, is finishing her first six-year term and is interviewing for another 6 years. Whoever gets the job going forward must be at least as good as Campanelli, which is a tall order. Campanelli has been one of the most proactive, committed public defenders in the county's history. Amy Campanelli, voted by Chicago Magazine as one of the 50 most powerful women in Chicago, has been called smart, diligent, hardworking, and dedicated, and she's distinguished herself as Cook County Public Defender. And she's here to talk a little bit about her office, her work, and the new criminal justice reform bill. Amy, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Karen. Glad to be here.
And let's start with just the basics on what is your office, what does your office do, and how does it do its job?
So I'm the public defender, and we represent everyone who is charged with a crime, whether that's a felony or a misdemeanor, if they are indigent, if they are too poor to hire their own attorney. We also represent parents who are at risk of losing their children to the government for allegations of neglect or abuse. So that's what we do all day, every day, protect the citizens of all of Cook County. That includes the city and the suburbs on any type of crime, or if, like I said, the parents are at risk of losing their children.
And your job is not an elected job. It's an appointed job. How does that just generally quickly work?
That's correct. So the president of the Cook County Board appoints the public defender. That wasn't always the case. It used to be the chief judge many years ago, but that changed. I'm not quite sure when. And so now it's the president, who is, of course, Tony Preckwinkle, would send a name over to the Cook County Commissioners after there's interviews. Right now there's a selection process, there's a selection committee, and there's interviews. And then whoever President Preckwinkle chooses, she submits that name to the 17 Cook County Board of Commissioners, and they vote on whether or not to accept that nomination.
Got it. Okay. So for people who sit there and say, oh, Chicago has so much crime, why should I care about the people who are accused? It's never going to happen to me or my loved ones, so why do I care if they are defended appropriately? To that, what do you respond?
Well, of course, it could happen to you. That's a silly statement to make, right? The question could be asked about every issue we face in the world, right? Why should I care about a dictator who's killing people in Syria? Because you should, and it might affect you. It affects everyone what happens around the world, and certainly everything that happens in Cook County. So we know that people are accused, right? But sometimes they're wrongly accused, right? You want the right person. If you're a victim of a crime, you want the right person caught for that crime. You don't want an innocent person charged with that crime, because then the real perpetrator goes free. And, you know, I'd ask people to look at what happened this summer, right? Did they see the George Floyd protests? Did they see what happened to him when he was just an accused and he was being arrested? Have they seen what happened to Breonna Taylor? There was an article in the Tribune today about a young man from L.A., right?
Yes,
who was handcuffed and shackled at his legs and pulled by police on the ground. And now he's not alive anymore because of the way he was arrested. So people need to care about this system and about the other actors in the system, like law enforcement. They should care that prosecutors are truthful and don't overreach and overcharge and prosecute innocent people, because it could happen to you. And certainly, I would say to all of those people, quite frankly, if you're a young black man, you are worried about that, right? Here in Chicago, you are worried about getting arrested because you are walking down the street and you're a young black man, or you're standing on a corner in a certain zip code, because that's what happens in this town. So people need to care about others in the system, and that's what we are as public defenders. We're the check and balance on that system, right? I am the check and balance on judges and prosecutors and law enforcement. That's our job, to make sure that the right people are arrested and convicted and that they get a fair trial and that their rights are not stomped upon, right, and that they are treated with dignity and respect when they are arrested, no matter what they are arrested for.
And, you know, that's one of the the keys of our the beautiful system that we have here. And I think that people are so used to having so many rights here. And even I say when people have to wear masks now, they're like, you're taking my rights away. Well, listen, we have some of the most pervasive freedoms anywhere. And like I've said, I've traveled all over the world to places like Vietnam and Russia. And, you know, there are no freedoms there. And we really take a lot for granted. And I think that if everybody in the criminal justice system, I've always said this, does their job, if the prosecutors do a really good job, the judges do a good job, the jurors are impartial, and the Amy Campanellis of the world do their job to defend and advocate zealously, then usually the right thing happens. I mean, not always, but it usually gets done correctly. And if that means someone walks free, or if that means someone goes to jail, so be it. But at least the system has done its fair job. And that's really all you can ask of it.
And that's correct. And I would say, you know, it's not a perfect system, right? There is no perfect system. But you're right, Karen. Like, if people do their job and they follow their oath, and, you know, what happens, it starts on the street, right? It starts with a phone call. A crime is being committed, or someone's getting arrested. And unfortunately, there are people out there, right, who misidentify people. There are people out there who lie, right? And then there are law enforcement who forget that they're here to serve and protect, and think that two wrongs can make a right, right? They're very powerful. They have a badge and a gun. And that power, you know, has to be kept in place, right? And that's why this new bill that was just passed by the Black Legislative Caucus is amazing, right? I always say, and I've been saying this, and that we've been working on many of the issues in the bill for years, that this is going to go down as one of the greatest pieces of legislation that Illinois has ever passed, ever. And it is because it is so attacking the systemic racism that is in our laws, that is in our behavior, is the way we don't hold police accountable. You know, the way that we have locked up people because they're poor for the same crime that someone who's wealthy and can and post money to get out. These are things that are not fair. This is not right. This is not justice. So we're trying to make it better by this bill. And we are making it better.
Well, and in light of George Floyd and all of those cases, you know, I guess I was worried that we had all these protests, which are fabulous. You know, people are protesting, and that's a great thing. But then what's going to be done about it? You know, after we're done with the protests, where are the changes that we've been promised? And I do think this bill has a lot of protections in it. I want to go over a few of them with you. But I think a few of them, I think, have frightened a few people. And I think maybe it's just by virtue of how they're being described. And let's start with the one that I have been asked to speak about in on national news, because elimination of cash bail, right? People say, whoa, what's that? They're just going to let out all the crazy people where they're going to be running around. Our crime is going to be even worse than it is. Amy, can you explain to our listeners what it means to eliminate cash bail and what this bill has done?
Okay, well, let me just say first, cash bail doesn't make anyone safer. And the abolition of cash bail doesn't make life more dangerous, right? The decision has to be made on a case-by-case basis whether this person who is standing before that judge on that case is a danger. Does he pose a danger if he or she is released? Or is he a flight risk? Is there some history that they willfully, intentionally missed court or didn't appear in court in the past? Not they just didn't appear because they couldn't get car fare, you know, or they were sick that day, or they were in the hospital. Those kind of things are not willful, right? There are lots of reasons that people don't show up in court. Sometimes it's willful, of course, but sometimes it's not. So cash money does not make us safer. When you have someone who's charged with a burglary, and it's the exact same kind of facts and taking all things considered the same, the person and a judge sets a cash bond in $2,000. My clients might not even have $200 because you have to post 10%. Wouldn't have $200 to post. But the guy who has the $200, he gets out, right? How does that make us safe? Remember, these are people who are innocent until proven guilty. They have not been convicted of an offense. And I just talked for the last few minutes about how many times people are accused and they didn't commit a crime. Or they're overcharged. They're accused of something that they didn't do. It's all a system of checks and balances. So when you lock people up in a cage before they have been convicted of a crime, you have to show that that person is a danger if they're released. Otherwise, you are destroying not only that person's life, right? You are putting them into an incredibly traumatic experience being in Cook County Jail. Incredibly traumatic. You're taking away their job. You're not allowing them to get back to their family. You might be stopping their mental health treatment or their substance abuse treatment. And that's affecting their family. And guess what? When you affect their family, it affects their community. And guess what? When you affect their community, it affects all of us. You know, and not even talking about the cost of a criminal justice system, how expensive it is when you lock up the wrong people and you convict the wrong people. And 20 years later, we're giving out million-dollar settlements because you convicted the wrong person. And the free person is still out there. So we got to get it right, and we got to get it right on the front end. And that means you don't lock people up just because you think maybe he's a danger. No, there's got to be some evidence. There's got to be something.
But if they are dangerous, they will be locked up. So
they will be locked up. The judges have all the discretion in the world. This bill does not change any of that.
We're talking
bail can be denied by a judge, for any forcible felony where prison is required and the defendant poses a specific real and present threat. It can be denied for all sorts of charges like stalking, domestic violence, where the defendant poses a threat, where a defendant is charged with a sex offense and poses a real threat, where the defendant is charged with any of 14 different firearm offenses and poses a threat, any class 3 or higher felony and poses a high likelihood of willful flight. So the judges have absolutely all the power they have to use their discretion, but they can't just lock up anybody, right? Because that's how we've done it for 60 years.
Amy,
and has it made us safer, Karen?
No, it seems like it's not. Our crime statistics are not good, and I think we all know that. Amy, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's continue to talk about the crime legislation and some of the things your office is doing. We're talking to Amy Campanelli, who is the Cook County Public Defender, and this is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're here with the Cook County Public Defender, Amy Campanelli. Her term ends at the end of March. I don't know about you, but if you've been listening to Amy and see what an advocate she is, I think we should call up our Cook County commissioners and tell them that we want Amy for another 6 years. I certainly do. Amy, let's talk a little bit about some of the other provisions in the criminal justice bill that was just signed into law by Governor Pritzker this past week. There were some police accountability provisions. Can you detail maybe a few of them and that you think are important that are going to be good for our criminal justice system?
Well, I think that one of the provisions that I'm very happy with that we've been fighting against is this requirement that someone has to sign an affidavit if they're making a complaint against the police officer. You know, if you're a victim of a crime, you don't have to sign an affidavit, right? You call the police, they come, they help you. So if someone is making a complaint against a police officer that they, you know, let's say wrongfully searched the wrong house and left you standing naked for 40 minutes in your room, right? That happened to Anjanette Young, right? She wants to make a complaint. She shouldn't have to sign an affidavit, right? And this will then allow more people to bring forth complaints, because if you have to sign an affidavit, that stifles people. That makes people say, no, I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm going to have to put my name to it, right? So also the records of police officers, right? Records of their discipline in the past, records where maybe they've used excessive force or they have actually lied in a police report or something. Those records are now going to be permanently kept. They are never going to be destroyed. And that is the only way we can hold the police accountable, because we can see a pattern in practice then where a certain police officer may be behaving badly. And that should be used against that police officer and permanently retained. So those are very good, issues in the law to hold police accountable. Body-worn cameras, right? Why wouldn't we want every police officer to wear a body-worn camera? There's no reason not to. And quite frankly, law enforcement wants this too, because you will see if people are also making a false complaint against a police officer, right? It protects police if there's body-worn camera and someone is saying the police officer did this, and then you watch the video and you can see, no, that's exactly not what happened. So that will also hold police accountable. Well, we're hopeful it will, right?
Well, it sounds like it's good for both sides of it.
Exactly.
We've seen just as many police officers be exonerated based upon what's on those body cams. It's going to be expensive and it's going to be difficult to implement probably, but the law gives us some time to do it. Are you hearing from police officers? And you know, we all have police officer friends and people who do a very good job out there. You know, we hear that they're leaving in droves. Someone just quoted me 150 police officers per month are leaving the city of Chicago alone, either retiring early or quitting. Or, you know, what is this? Is this bad for their morale? And should it be bad for their morale? How would you address a police officer who said, "Haven't we been through enough? This is just too much for us."
Well, I think, you know, obviously there is a lot of scrutiny of law enforcement, the Black Lives Matter movement, everything we've seen with the invention of, you know, the body-worn camera. We're seeing videos. We're seeing police behave badly. We're seeing how they behave during the protests, peaceful protesters who were wrongfully arrested, you know, several hundred of them, not given lawyers at the police station, not allowed to use their phones to call their family members. So we see that. And yes, police are under a lot of scrutiny, right? But they have to be, because they have a gun and they carry a badge and they have power. And if accountability provisions require the police to be more professional, less arrogant, and recognize that they are here to serve and protect, then that's why it's good, right? They have to be accountable because they can abuse that power. And the officers who are following the law and being appropriate and being professional, they should welcome and embrace anything that makes the police more professional. So if officers are leaving the force, maybe they shouldn't be police officers, right? Maybe they just shouldn't be if they don't like that they're being under scrutiny, they don't like these new laws. Because these laws are put in place to protect them too, and to protect all of us, and help police not make mistakes, right?
Amy, you have a mental health unit in the Cook County Public Defender's Office. Could you quickly tell us a little bit about it and how it deals with people who have mental illness issues?
Sure. So we know, public defenders know, and I've been doing this 33 years, that many of my clients suffer from mental health issues. It might not be as serious as like being bipolar or schizophrenic, but they have other issues. They've suffered trauma. You know, they have post-traumatic stress. So I knew 3 years ago that I wanted to start a mental health unit. I wanted my own psychologist on staff. I wanted social workers on staff to help my lawyers understand these mental health issues, and that will help them better defend them. So I have a mitigation department and a mental health unit that now work together to tell the story of the client, to help the lawyers. You know, I'm a lawyer, right? I'm not a mental health professional. And I'm not going to be. I need that professional to help me look at the issues that my client is suffering from. Tell me how those issues affected maybe the crime, but also other things in their lives. And then I present that story, that human being, to the prosecutor and the judge when I'm negotiating a case, when I'm working out a plea deal, or at a sentencing hearing if my clients are convicted. Because when a judge sentences someone, he should know about that client who he's sentencing, right? Because all of that knowledge helps us to help our clients who are suffering mental health issues. And I would say, you know, how should mental health illness be factored into how defendants are treated, right? That's the main thing, right? Should we punish someone who's suffering from a mental health issue? It depends, of course, what they're charged with. But really, there's so many clients who are arrested because of their mental health issue, right? For very minor crimes, misdemeanor crimes, criminal trespass, you know, criminal damage to property, things like that. Can't we deal with those cases outside of the court system? Isn't that a better way to get them on the path, to get them into treatment, instead of expecting the criminal court system to figure it out? Because we've done a bad job of it.
Well, and they're going to, at some point, those people who are convicted are going to come out. They're going to come back into the community, and they're going to have less of a chance of integrating and with their family and their the housing and their jobs, because now they have a record, right? And then now we have the situation where they're still mentally ill and they still have those issues, and now they have all those strikes against them. And again, those are the people who are going to reoffend.
They are. And we've been locking up the mentally ill and expecting a different result, right? We've been locking them up for years without treatment, without looking at how we can rehabilitate them. And then they're coming right back into the system. And many of our clients who are suffering from mental health issues don't need to be punished, right? They need treatment. And that's how we're going to get them on the path to not recidivate. Because I always say success to me as the public defender, right? This is my success, is having less clients That's what I want, less on the front end. Because on the front end, we're being smart about crime. You know, we're not locking up everybody. We're helping the police put people into deflection programs and diversion programs. And on the back end, when people are coming off parole, out of the penitentiary, we're wrapping our arms around them. They've served their sentence. Why do they have to wear that scarlet letter for the rest of their lives? No, they need a job. They need to get back in school. Every human being wants to be able to take care of themselves. And if they have a family, they want to take care of their family. And if we don't have those opportunities out there, whether it's, you know, getting people interviewing skills, helping them get into a substance abuse treatment or mental health issues or cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, if we don't do that, we will get the same result, which is recidivism, which is coming back into the system. And that doesn't help any of us.
Amy, we have just 1 minute, but just can you tell me some of the things that you'd like to accomplish if you get a second term as a Cook County Public Defender?
Sure. So I just started an immigration unit in my office. I saw the gap there. I saw that we represent, of course, a lot of non-citizens who end up in the criminal system. But what happens in the criminal system greatly affects what can happen to them in the immigration system, whether or not they're detained and removed from the country. And I'm not an immigration lawyer, and my lawyers on staff aren't immigration lawyers. It's a very nuanced, specialized type of law. So I hired a supervisor who has been working in the immigration field for at least 10 years. And now we're going to hire lawyers for her. We're going to hire outreach workers. We're going to hire an investigator so that we can have a whole unit to be a resource for those clients who are in the criminal system. And eventually what I'd like to do is help some of those clients in immigration court also. I'm working on legislation right now to give me the authority to go to immigration court and be there at detention hearings. Because I don't know, Karen, if you know this or your listeners know this, but you do not have the right to a lawyer in immigration court. So only the rich have lawyers in immigration court. And the rest of the clients are sitting on a screen. They probably don't speak English, the majority of them. And there's a prosecutor and the judge in the room. How can that be fair? How is that going to be a fair detention hearing? How is that going to be a just removal proceeding? Of course it's not. And only if you get lawyers in the room. The lawyers are the ones who see what reform is needed. The lawyers see the injustice just by being in the room. So that's what I want to do. And obviously continue my work in the police station unit, making sure that we are getting the calls, that we're going to the police stations to stop possible abuse, but also to make sure the clients understand what's happening to them. We call their families. We tell them what's going to happen the next day, if they're going to be charged, if they're going to bond court. And it brings credibility to the whole system.
Amy, frankly, thank you so much for joining us. I hate to cut you off, but have to take a break. Good luck with your rest of your term, and I hope to see you for another 6 years. Thank you so much for joining
us.
All right. You take care. When we come back, we're going to be taking your legal questions here on WGN.